Welcome to Turquoise City, written and read by Jed S. Holmes. Part 1, Prologue. We'll be closing down at the end of the month, Little Al said with a slight grimace as he set the pint down in front of Zeke. Zeke was shocked. He had been coming to the Brown Theater for years, even on nights when there weren't shows. Of course, there's always the Ivy Brothers Tavern, Al continued, but Zeke wasn't listening anymore. Al should know by now. I'll never step foot in that joint again, after all I've told him. It was a dismal, rainy, but warm March night in Turquoise City. Zeke had finished up his work relatively quickly and headed 5 blocks down the main strip of town to the Brown Theater. It wasn't the closest bar, but it was the only one he really liked. Little Al and his brother Big Al had been running the place ever since he could remember. They did a great job. Nobody knew if they were actually brothers. It didn't really matter at this point, and it was certainly too late to start asking personal inquiries like that now. So the obvious question, what's going in here? Zeke asked Little Al. It's a longer story than I'd really like to get into, but the short version is Tristan Backus and the Shill Oil Conglomerate have reason to believe there's oil under the building, and they're going to raise it in favor of pumping all that oil out. Fracking or something. Supposed to be super safe. Zeke couldn't tell if Little Al was being sarcastic or not with that last line. Isn't there something we can do? Afraid not. They have all the permitting. This plan goes deeper than you know. I wish I could say we could come up with a magic number of dollars and can save this place, but they got the government involved. Eminent domain and all. Zeke hadn't even touched his beer. His jaw dropped. He was shocked. Not only was his favorite theater and watering hole about to be gone, but to make matters worse, there wasn't even something else going in. He could pallet it if the brothers were having financial trouble, in which case he'd do everything he could to save the bar. But it was painfully clear that Little Al had run out of options. He had heard recently from his cousin that the town had been warned aplenty about getting into bed with Shill Oil. Zeke was afraid that this was just the beginning. He was right. I'll be right back. Zeke stood up and took the long walk down the narrow corridor to the men's bathroom. He sauntered extra slow this time, looking at all the vintage photographs on the walls of performers in the biggest regulars to Brown Theater. Mr. Venus, Frog Pants, even the omnipotent Ilias came down from the mill a few times a year for drinks in a holiday charity drive. He used to be on the wall, till he asked to be taken down. That's a story for another day. Big Al had put the omnipotent Ilias back up on the wall. He had taken the photo, and it was one of his favorites. Walking out of the bathroom, Zeke ran right into Big Al. Hey, Zeke. Big Al tried to smile, but it was painfully obvious to Zeke that the news had just come down and was still troubling both brothers. I heard what's happening. This is rotten, Big Al. We can't let them do this. I didn't sleep last night, Zeke, Al stated with a calm nonchalance. All I wanted to do was find a loophole or a way to hold on. For the next 30 days, we will put on the best shows I can scrape together. My promoter is out of town, but I've already got calls out to the E Sharp band, and the band that fit is supposed to come through and help us do a benefit. I can promise you we will open up somewhere else. I know it won't be the same. He was right, Zeke thought. It wouldn't be the same. There was an incredible amount of history here. If the stories were written on the walls, maybe it was better they weren't, considering the walls were already sweating and breathing from all the heat and rain outside. Yet still, so much to be lost just because of a corporate desire to be in the green, one that wasn't even based out of Turquoise City. Zeke resigned himself to look into it further and not go down without a fight. The plan would not fall into place tonight, but something was already brewing in his oversized brain. The Brown Theater was founded early in the 20th century, 1920 or 1921. No one really knew, as there wasn't an exact date on the foundation. It had been through a number of incantations: Flapper Den, Gambling Pit, Jazz Bar, Rockabilly Club, but owned and run by the two Owls since 1984. The bar was directly in the back, solid wood with brass rails and accents, one of the most beautiful you'd ever lay a coaster on. No one who was a regular dared to set his pint directly on the bar. If you did, it was clear you had never been, and Al would point at the large sign above the cash register and throw a coaster at your head. If you continued to disregard the simple rule, you were tossed permanently. No exceptions. Women usually got an exception, but the Brown Theater didn't attract a lot of single ladies unless there was a heartthrob singer up on stage. Men who brought their girlfriends typically gave them a rundown ahead of time. "Don't make me look like a fool in front of Al," was a recurring theme to many a conversation pre-Brown Theater. As for alternative couples, Brown Theater had grown more accepting as the years progressed. Pride Night once a month packed the place, and the brothers would be foolish to turn on it now. Besides, most of the misbehaving took place when there was a cowboy hat or slide guitar on stage. Whiskey drunk and looking for trouble, Al threatened those he cut off a free ride to Monotrolia or the Ivy Brothers Tavern, two places that wouldn't take kindly to an unnecessary ruckus. Plenty of violators of the coaster rule had been permanently kicked out. The Lost and Found was full of fedoras, typically lost mid-struggle, as Little Al hauled off the offender by their collar. Turquoise City always had new music lovers, minstrels and vagrants coming through. The theater was never hard up for bodies to fill the room. It was a large room at that, too. Some underhand dealing between the Als and the fire department had obscured the capacity. The Als had always been very deft in their dealings. Not shady like the Ivy Brothers, but savvy, smart, and a few steps ahead. This is why Zeke still couldn't fathom what he had been told. The place was always rocking on show nights, and had been such a beacon of light and creativity in a wage-driven modern world. Sold-out shows could turn dangerous, but there were a few auxiliary exits that would spit you out in an alley with no way back in and a long walk around the building. The room was always understaffed, but that meant moshing during metal shows and plenty of cannabis when the psychedelic rock bands tripped their way through a couple sets of long-form extemporization. Those were the owner's favorites, and it was clear why. They loved a good crunchy guitar tone or noodly jam. If you had half a talent to improvise for 20 minutes, the Als would probably find out about you, and at the very least, offer an opening slot. There was a large classic marquee out front, with big block red and black lettering. Al, doesn't matter which one, had fixed all the twinkling lights and restored the marquee to its glorious full illuminating capacity. They had meticulously cleaned out all the bugs behind the facade and made the front shine. There was still a 50s-style ticket booth out front that held 1.5 normal-sized people, or 2 high school pukes who would usually be tasked with operating will call on one side and ticket sales on the other. They practically would stand back to back. There was no show tonight, and the building was vacant beyond the proprietors and Zeke. It was only 9 p.m. Things would undoubtedly pick up by 11. Back at the bar, Zeke took a sizable gulp of his beer. "I've got a new contract at my job. They seem nice enough, but it might be the devil's work. I haven't decided yet, and I'll let you know when I do." "Who's that with?" Little Al chortled menacingly. "It's not Shill, but another group called Environment Transfer Partners. They do a lot of environment transferring. I'm still trying to nail down exactly what that is. But it seems they take large, naturally beautiful areas of land and find ways for investors to profit off of unused resources. They have all assured me that their work uses green technologies and is environmentally conscious." He finished this last line with a sarcastic edge, while making quote signs with his hands. "Sounds pretty terrible if you ask me, but I'm about to get ravaged by a greedy conglomerate myself. So I'm very skeptical of any corporate bureaucracy that claims any sort of benevolence." "You don't think bureaucratic benevolence exists?" "Not intentionally. I worked for a bank for 3 years before Al and I opened this place. They didn't want to help anyone unless it brought that person into an indentured servitude with the bank creditors." Remember, Zeke, the inability to pin misdeeds on a single operator of the corporate machine allows the machine to continue feeding on injustice and greed with anonymity and impunity. Someone walked in, interrupting Al's musings on the topic. It was a strikingly attractive older woman. She sat at the opposite end of the bar. Zeke polished off his beer, took another look at her. He then realized it was his girlfriend's birthday tomorrow, and he needed to buy a card. He threw a 10 on the bar and walked out. Chapter 1. The Realization. Zeke made it to his car without incident, put the key in the ignition, and fired up the radio. You're listening to 108.1 WDMM, the new frequency, your home for everything that really rocks. And a few things that don't, Zeke chimed in to himself. Frog Pants here with you, taking you to midnight. We've got a big announcement tomorrow. Be the 10th caller after we play back-to-back tracks from the Stone Turtles and win free tickets to 108.1 Springfest at the Brown Theater, April 28th. Don't think that's going to be happening, Zeke chuckled, mildly amused by himself. The radio switched to commercials. He turned it off and drove in silence the rest of the way to Sherman's Family Convenience Store. He had a thoughtful birthday card to pick out. When he reached the parking lot, Sherman's was open, but looking a little unusual. Yellow-chipped scaffolding obscured the facade, and there was nothing to indicate Tom Sherman and his family were still running the place. Zeke parked, got out of his car, and ran through the rain, clanking the bell rather loudly as he entered the double doors to the store. "Hey, Zeke, good to see you." It was Tom from the front counter, always a kind soul. He didn't really have to be nice in the Convenience Mart line of work, but it kept people coming in here instead of the Green Dot Quick Stop down the street. Tom had 13 kids with his wife Mavis. Different variations of their gene pool could be seen stocking the shelves, performing maintenance, and cashing people out. Zeke was pretty sure the Shermans had never hired an outside employee. "Good to see you too, Tom. It's been a minute. Hey, what's going on out front?" "Oh, we're getting a new awning. Should be finished in the next few days." Tom seemed a little startled, and his face appeared as if he was withholding some information, but Zeke let it go. "I gotta pick out a birthday card for Cassiel. She's turning 28, you know. There's some new ones, actually. A whole new row of cards. Let me know what you think." As Zeke walked back through the store, it became very clear that a few changes had already been made to the interior. He had just been here last week. There were more oversized cards with fancy lettering, glitter, and popped-out surprises. A few of them even sang back to him. "I'm not buying these. Who's buying this crap? Has Tom gone mad? Does he even look who comes in the store?" The Sherman Family Mart was constructed adjacent to Turquoise Valley Circle, a medium-sized gated community of green homes on the east side of town for middle-income worker ants. They were important to the infrastructure of the city, albeit only in large quantity, the worker ants, that is. The gated communities provided a streamlined system. "We will keep you feeling safe if you keep working." Zeke was running at 15 Turquoise Valley Circle, just inside the gate, three houses down. His family had passed down a small tract of land on the other side of town, but even that had been overtaken on all sides by futuristic-looking, thin-walled constructions. He didn't know if he actually wanted to live over there anymore. He didn't want to stay in Turquoise Valley Circle either, for much longer, if he could help it. "I can't imagine any of these contractors actually live in houses like the ones they build," Zeke had often thought when he first moved in. This thought had crossed his mind most recently after punching a hole in the wall almost clear to the outside. This was years ago. His anger hadn't bubbled up to the surface in quite some time. Lately, he had been humming along and didn't mind living here so much. Even with all the neighbors' noise, he was a contented colony worker, given just enough monetary motivation to do his job well and enough satisfaction in his personal life to keep him going for the foreseeable future. Zeke couldn't find a card. He walked over to the coolers to grab a couple 40s, his favorite drink. Craft beer was here to stay, but it wasn't necessarily a good thing. All the IPAs on the shelves were made by the same macro brewery who packaged and distributed his malt liquor. Zeke knew this. He wasn't sure the faux 21-year-old beer snobs did, but they would undoubtedly be coming in to check out the selection. All the India Pale Ales tasted approximately the same, at least to him. Quack Brewing, Legion Beer Company, Angel's Ribs, they were all prominently displayed. Something was different over here, too. There was only one cooler of all the standard domestics he was used to, and a giant blue neon sign with a flashing red arrow pointing to the craft beer cave that had sprung up seemingly overnight. He wasn't going in there. Not today, not ever if he could help it. Next, he hit the school supplies section. It had moved an aisle over, go figure. If I can't find an appropriate card, I'll just assemble one myself. He grabbed some scissors, construction paper, glue, and a pack of those centered colored markers they hadn't sold since the 90s. Tom Sherman still had a few complete sets on his shelves, though. He returned up front to check out with Tom. Find everything you need? Well, sort of, Tom. I gotta ask, what's with all the changes? There's new greeting cards. I've never seen that beer cave before. The aisles are all shifted. What's going on? Well, the aisles are moving because we're putting in a big cosmetics display in 2 days, Tom said with a certain pride. We've been bought out by Buy and Go. I'll still be here, but I'm transitioning ownership over the next 3 months to corporate Buy and Go headquarters. As you can see, they've already started to make some changes. I'll still be here, just in a more limited capacity. That's a damn shame, Tom. I hope it was worth it, Zeke mumbled. Huh? Yeah, they made me an offer Mavis and our kids couldn't turn down. Bought the property for a sizable sum and agreed to pay me salary to continue managing here as long as I wanted. I don't have to worry about squeaking by in the winter months anymore. This year was especially rough, Zeke. It's been a long day, Tom. Forgive me if I seem rude. Would you mind just cashing me out? I'll catch up with you soon, but I need to get home and make a birthday card for Cassiel. You didn't find one you liked in our expanded section? We have new idiosyncrasy cards. Tom gave it the best pitch he could, but realized quickly it was a lost cause. Oh, all right, I'll cash you out. Sorry it's been such a long day for you, bud. Thanks, Tom. I'll see you soon. Zeke grabbed the plastic bag and headed toward the exit, not without noticing the shiny new security system that had just been installed. A cover of Private Eyes he had never heard before, with a female vocalist, was playing over the speakers in the store. He found this mildly ironic as he pushed the door, clanged the bell, and walked out. As Zeke left the store, he also noticed there was a new high-rise going up across the boulevard, and it didn't look to be affordable housing, judging by the sign out front. The loft's at Running Meadows, a complete lifestyle experience. The gold, swanky lettering twinkled at him in the night. It was practically a tease, yelling, "Ha ha, in your dreams, you can't afford to live here." Zeke drove into the development. A yield signpost quivered up ahead, signaling to him that change was on the horizon. This unsettled Zeke. Chapter 2. Prefabricated Paradise. Turquoise Valley Circle. Welcome home. You live here. The big sign written in large friendly letters proclaimed to all who entered the gated community. The statement at the gate grew more callous and demeaning to Zeke every time he passed it. This wasn't his fault. Maybe he had been living in this town too long. He headed down his short stretch of road past the gate towards his home, but instead of turning into his driveway, he continued down the street to park. The man had to put together a birthday card after all. Zeke wanted to do it in peace and solitude, at one of the dead ends further into the development, ideally near the park. Any of the cul-de-sacs would do. They practically all looked the same anyway. When Zeke had first moved into the neighborhood, he kept pulling into his neighbor's driveway on accident. The address numbers weren't very visible at night, and all the houses looked the same. His solution was to hang a flag off his house. It lasted about a week. He received a very stern letter in the mail from the town board, and had no choice but to take it down, or fear losing his place to live, and significantly more. This still troubled him in the present. He wanted revenge, but the cool, calculated, and intelligent kind, not brutish force. He found a suitable dead end with enough streetlight that he could shut his car off and work on the card on his front dashboard in peace. He spent the next 20 minutes cutting and pasting, making heart shapes and cutesy designs. He was almost finished when... tap, tap, tap. It was a metal baton hitting his driver's side window. Startled, he turned on his dome light and cracked the door open to his car. It was off. It wasn't a new car, but it did have power windows. "Can I help you?" Zeke asked with a confident authority. "I'm here with Turquoise Valley Circle Security. We received a report of a suspicious vehicle on this cul-de-sac," the small balding man in a white security outfit replied. "Well, sir, if the neighbors had actually wanted to do their due diligence to round you up, they would have noticed the decals for the development on my vehicle. If they had talked to me, they would have realized that I'm a very reasonable and decent resident. The portly security officer cut him off. Well, I received the call, and you still haven't explained what you're doing here. It's really none of your business. I live right down the road, and I didn't want to go home yet, Zeke chuckled. Do you find this funny? I don't. I suggest you go home, or else. Or else what? I'll call the police, that's what. You know what? You go right ahead, Zeke called the power tripping guard's potential bluff. He didn't have anything illegal in the car, and he always liked serving justice to these sort of vigilante security guards. Unbeknownst to him, this was the response this man perpetually received. I'm calling right now. The man pulled out his phone, dialed 911. It started to ring. Really? You're calling 911? You don't even have the police department's regular phone number? You're definitely going to regret this. The security guard wasn't listening and was now talking to the 911 operator. Yes, hello? I'm at the end of Valley View Drive in Turquoise Valley Circle. There's a suspicious vehicle here and a man who is being uncooperative. Could you send an officer down? Thank you. I just want you to know, now that you've done all this, that I came here for some peace, quiet, and privacy after work. There's nothing illegal about any of that. The security guard didn't really know what to say. Well, your vehicle being parked on the side of the road upset the neighbors. That's fine. They could have figured out the bigger picture if they had just talked to me, like a decent human being. You too. That's all I wanted. Zeke didn't try and out-hustle the security guard to talk to the police officer. When the squad car pulled up, he sat calmly in his vehicle, door open, dome light on. The Turquoise City police officer shut off his cruiser and got out calmly. Zeke was secretly glad it was the city police and not a sheriff. That's a second story for another day. As soon as the policeman stood up straight, the rotund, balding security guard started to bombard him with a high-pitched din of neurotic information dump. When he was done, the officer started to walk toward Zeke's car. Good evening, sir. Can you tell me why the security guard had to call 911? The police stated with an air of authority. Zeke already didn't like him either. Officer, with all due respect, there was no need for him to call you and waste your time coming out here. I was finishing up a birthday card for my girlfriend, and I didn't want to return home until it was completed. Furthermore, I wanted it to be a surprise, so that's why I came here. Well, the security officer says you weren't being cooperative. I told him I was doing nothing illegal, that I live in the development. Zeke was quickly realizing this might have been a bad idea. The police officer wasn't quite as cordial as last time, and seemed to be already siding with the security guard. Well, I'm going to have to ask you to step out of the car, he stated casually. Officer, why? I'm willing to relinquish my rights and let you look through the vehicle, but I had one beer after work and headed to the convenience store, and then to here. That has been my night. One beer, huh? I hear that a lot. Now, will you please exit your vehicle with your hands above your head? All right. Now, I'm going to ask you to walk one foot in front of the other in a straight line for 10 paces. Can you do that, or are you too drunk? It didn't matter if you were really intoxicated. It just mattered that Turquoise City Police could lock you up if you didn't pass their arbitrary sobriety exercises. Warm bodies in the cells meant more money for Turquoise City Police. Zeke knew this. He also knew he needed to ace this damn test. The officer suspiciously remained silent for an extended period. Zeke wasn't going to break the silence. He stood there, his gaze hopefully piercing the back of the policeman's brain. All right, begin. Zeke took 10 very deliberate steps, practically pirouetted, and took 10 more right back. Officer, if you want, you can just breathalyze me. It's going to be damn close to zero. Yeah, 0 point what? Zeke could see now the policeman's badge read, Officer Solchek. Solchek was dripping with black sarcasm. Zeke didn't respond. He was going to let the end be satisfying enough. The sobriety test continued. Finger on the nose, flashlight in the eyes. Flashlight in the eyes lasted forever. Finally, it was time for the breathalyzer. The cop couldn't help but get a few more digs in. You know I get all my convictions, so you better blow. Zeke gave it all he had. He was ready for a little justice. Beep. The officer snatched the breathalyzer back. He eyed it suspiciously. And again. He didn't get the result he wanted, Zeke thought to himself. Zeke blew again, figuring there would probably be a third attempt. He was right. Finally, he struck up the nerve to ask, "So, what'd I blow?"
"You know what you blew," Solchek replied with a disgusted tone.
Great, this guy isn't even the least bit cordial that I was legally allowed to be in my car doing everything I was doing and driving, Zeke thought to himself.
"Officer, may I leave? We're gonna take a look in your car first."
He wasn't about to let him go yet. The officer dove headfirst into the sedan. He spent 10 minutes shuffling around and finally exited. His exhuming of the vehicle had only yielded a small white pill.
"Well, well, well, what is this?" Solchek's eyes lit back up.
"It's either a breath mint or an allergy pill if there's a number on it," Zeke stated matter-of-factly as he pulled his phone out of his pocket and searched the internet for images of his allergy medication.
"See?"
The cop didn't immediately respond. It took him a minute to process that he wasn't going to take Zeke to the Turquoise City lockup. He finally countered,
"I'm going to write you a citation for an illegally parked vehicle. Your court date is on the paper. If you want, you can pay the fine online or mail it in. Paying the fine is an admission of guilt."
Zeke didn't say another word. Solchek handed him the paper. They both got in their respective vehicles and left. The security guard was heard snickering as he entered the white, dinky pickup the gated community provided as a work vehicle. Zeke finally made it home. Turquoise Valley Circle, number 15. Cassiel was already in bed. The card would have to wait until morning.
"What happened, baby?" she mumbled half asleep. "Thought you were just having one beer."
This wasn't accusatory, just curiosity on the part of Cassiel. Zeke sensed that. "It's a very long story. I'll tell you in the morning, dear. I'm sorry I'm late. It's entirely my fault. Sleep well."